Dreaming of my other one was not where I thought I was. Dreaming of my other one was not where I thought I was. Dreaming of my
This is Tongue in Cheek.
Was not where
Episode 11.
I thought I was.
Offsite. We normally come to you live in the studio doing live exercises, but today our episode is pre-recorded.
Now let's segment our sound into two channels. So, like a hum, which is going to be completely nasal and independent of the form of your mouth. Try forming your mouth in any shape and humming. That D form, where it comes forward, your lips should not change your hum. And the rest of our mouth, or the rest of our vocal cavity, vocal channel, we're going to just lightly tap our lips together to make that kind of fish bubble sound as it's pacing through. Now with somebody else in the room, we're going to do an exhausting breath exercise. We'll do it between the two of us that are here, using an, starting off with a P sound, but that whole sound, P, P,
P, P,
P, P, P,
P,
P. So on the count of three, we'll start. And between the two of us, let's try to keep it as long as we can. This is a very simple, exhausting breath. So pull in. 1, 2, 3. And pulling in again, this time, before we go, try to find focus on what parts of your sound are fading first. What becomes hard to control in this sounding as it elongates to its very tip. 1, 3. P. Trying to maintain the same Okay, I'm pulling back now. Let's change to me instead of P.
You will inhale for as long as you can, and on the inhale you will say me. So you're sucking in air and speaking on the inhale, me.
Me.
And then as you exhale, you will say P.
Me. Like that?
Me.
Me. Okay. So we're switching between an inhale of
me
and an exhale of
P.
So this one might be a little shorter.
As long an inhale of me as possible, and then you comes out as P when you exhale. So, on the count of three.
One. We're going to inhale on the count of three?
Yep, so start with having completely breathed out, like a completely empty chest, so you can inhale me as long as possible, and then you exhale P.
So on the count of three, let's push that last breath out.
Yeah.
One, two, three. Find sync with one of us. In the boiling heat, we wonder what parts of our voice die first. When does it lose its gender? When does it lose its wetness? When does it lose its rasp? When does it lose its soothing calm? When does it lose its surprise? And when does it lose its drone? What of our voice dies first? What last shape? Do our glottals char and then our consonants blur, welling up in the last drips of saliva? What last wisp of breath? Do our vocal cords seize and let the air from the last falling of our chest pass by? Or do these stretched cords vibrate later than our lungs to cast a last ungrainy f? What last timber? Does our voice leave us with its own familiar sound? Does our voice leave us while it is still our own? Or does it find its last shape through the slacking of our jaw, spilling out through this unreplayable corporeal instrument? Starting off with I and O sounds. I in counts of three, I, two, three,
Hi.
So,
I'm vlogging today to document my voice. I'm not making this up. I honestly cannot talk in any other way than like this. Today's vlogging prompt by Mama Cat is... What do you think about flu shots, yay or nay?
Counts of four.
I said nay a month ago. I should have said yay, as my voice will testify. Because every morning I wake up, it's even worse than this. And my kids don't read, so I can't, write messages on a whiteboard for them, or text.
I
never taught him sign language either.
And noticing that there's a shift between the start, I, and how it continues into E, how can you prolong that first I? I. What do you have to do with the shape of your mouth to do that? I. Dropping your jaw. I. And seeing what your tongue does in order to shape that sound and prolong the first exclamation of I. How does it exhaust your chest?
An excerpt from Rilke, Primal Sound, 1919.
And shifting to O.
The coronal suture of the skull has, let us assume, a certain similarity to the closely wavy line which the needle of a phonograph engraves on the receiving, rotating cylinder of the apparatus. What if one changed the needle and directed it on its return journey along a tracing which was not derived from the graphic translation of sound, but existed of itself naturally? Well, to put it plainly, along the coronal suture. What would happen?
And now softening the beginning, still in counts of four.
A sound would necessarily result, a series of sounds, music, feelings which, incredulity, timidity, fear, awe, which of all feelings here possible prevents me from suggesting a name for the primal sound, which would then make its appearance in the world.
Still softening that sound at the start.
Leaving that aside for the moment, what variety of lines then, occurring anywhere, could one not put under the needle and try out? Is there any contour that one could not, in a sense, complete in this way and then experience it, as it makes itself felt, thus transformed in another field of sense?
Now let's take a pause.
What does it sound like on a basic material level when a voice is transplanted to another body, be it human or otherwise?
Think back to that I. We're going to do short exclamations of I and then a rounded O without the start of O. So instead of doing O, you're going to be O with O. And I, instead of extending it into an E, instead of I, you're just going to exclaim I. So we'll do I and then O. So I, O. I, O. I, O. I, O. I, O. I, O. I, 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 I,
today, after years of recovery, Tim sounds almost completely normal. But the struggles of being voiceless for two decades still haunt him.
A lot of it's hard to explain because people take their voice for granted. I mean, it's part of a normal life to be able to talk. When that disappears, your body just starts to fall apart. You lose all your self-esteem. You don't feel good about yourself. And you just basically give up on life.
Curiously, Tim does not sound like the organ donor.
Yeah, so far so good. Everything's doing good. I don't sound like the donor because we have audio tapes of him. And he was a very large man. And he had a real low voice. And I have two brothers and four sisters. And we think, if anything, I sound like my dad.
What makes us sound the way we do is the shape of our mouth, the amount of space that we have in our head to resonate which is why our voice boxes can be very different in terms of dimension sometimes, but we sound very much like one of our parents.
Today is a very good day.
Great, you're doing just perfectly.
As you can notice, the front pitch way up.
What does it sound like on a basic material level when a voice is transplanted to the site of a recording? What does it sound like on a basic material level when a voice is transplanted to a non-bodily vessel? What is the materiality of that shift of locale? What does that shift actually sound like? What is the sound of the change?
You can start to hear the fluttering because of the tightening of the side of my jaw when I'm extending that O. So let's just take our hands, and when opening for an O sound and extending that O, rounded again at the beginning, keep your two hands, the fingertips of your hands, on the side of your cheeks, and push in just gently as you're doing the O. 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 So dropping the I for now. O. O. If it helps, you can start high on your cheeks, and throughout the O, drag your fingertips down your cheeks. Ooh, for a count of four. One, two, three, four. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Dragging your fingertips down. If you're getting a fluttering sound like I am, try to straighten your back and reposition yourself on the chair or however you're standing so that your diaphragm is loose. Might help to shift your pelvis forward. Ooh, 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 ooh. Okay, let's pause so they can see you're running out of breath. So adding a breath here between our rounded O's, our O, and I want you to position yourself in a way that on your exhale, on your O, on your sounding, you're tilting your abdomen and your upper body forward, sort of pointing your nose down to the ground, and then sweeping up and pulling back on a inhale. So imagine, oh, oh, that you're rowing a boat with your upper body, making your exhale and sounding the same length and same pace and same effort as your inhale. So here we go, and oh, 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 lean back. Ooh, and forward. Ooh, and back. And forward. And ooh. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Cylinder recordings were invented in the late 1800s and popular through the 1930s. We have about 7,000 field cylinders, and each one of them is unique because they were cut in the field for each individual recording. This is actually the second largest field cylinder recording collection in the United States after the Library of Congress.
Ethnographers would go out into the field and they knew that these languages were becoming endangered. So they would want to go out and preserve these languages as well as their stories and their music and things like that. A lot of these formats are very difficult to play back. So we have specialized gear that's designed to play them back as accurately as possible.
The cylinder machine that we have here at IU is unique. It is the first of its kind actually out in production.
It has a laser that will measure the distance between itself and the cylinder. So a cylinder, when it spins, it's not perfectly centered. So it has a wobble to it. What that laser does, it gives us a measurement to basically make up for that sort of wobble. When we play it back, we get a nice smooth surface to play on.
It is a lot more precise than other types of machines where you might be adjusting by eye or not at all.
We'll get a cylinder. Then first we assess whether it can be played. We put it onto the machine and we use the laser to make measurements to make sure that it's perfectly centered. We have a good idea of what is in these collections, but we don't know exactly what's in these collections yet. There could be languages, there could be songs, there could be significant things that have been overlooked, or maybe never even heard from since they were recorded. It's really a special thing to be able to hear these things and then also make them accessible to everyone else.
So the out breath. Sounding of the comes with no effort. It's just part of your exhale as you lean forward and compress your stomach.
Yes, I can hear my echo. And the words are coming back on top of me. The words are spilling out of my head and then returning into my ear. It puts a distance between the words and their apprehension or their comprehension. The words coming back.
Seem slow. They don't seem to have the same forcefulness as when I speak them.
I think it's also slowing me down. I think that it makes my thinking slower. I have a double take on myself.
And now continuing. We're going to add that sharp I, just the start, not that E.
I am once removed from myself.
But just the I, the beginning of our sounding.
I am thinking and hearing and filling up a vocal void. I find that I have trouble making connections between thoughts.
How does the recording become a prosthesis for voice? A substitute that keeps chattering away about our opinions and our aches and our desires, even though the mouth might stop or rot away.
Evacuated your air, completely leaning forward.
How does a recording continue as an active speaker and a type of life form after the human body that originates it has disappeared?
J'aurais essayé de répondre à votre question sur Narcisse Écho. Évidemment, il se trouve que, d'un point de vue plus directement lié à l'image, que l'histoire de Narcisse Écho, c'est donc l'image aussi de... C'est la question de l'image spéculaire et de la voix, le rapport entre la vue et la voix. Entre, donc, la lumière et la parole, la réflexion, miroir, et puis la parole, ce qui se passe ici maintenant, n'est-ce pas, où il y a à la fois un miroir, une parole, une caméra, je réponds à des questions, je répète. Donc je suis Narcisse et Écho, là, dans une scène, tout seul, je fais Narcisse et Écho, moi, tout seul. Et à ce qui arrive d'extraordinaire dans cette scène, donc, que j'ai étudiée d'autre part, dans des séminaires, dans des textes. Et ce que j'aime beaucoup dans cette scène, c'est le moment où Écho piège Narcisse, en quelque sorte. Écho est condamné par la déesse, jalouse d'elle, à ne jamais pouvoir parler en son propre nom, mais à devoir toujours répéter la fin des phrases de l'autre. Mais Écho, dans sa ruse infinie, sa ruse aimante, s'arrange pour, en répétant les dernières syllabes ou la dernière syllabe des mots de Narcisse, par faire en sorte que ces mots deviennent les siens à elle, qu'elle s'approprie en quelque sorte ce langage, en répétant le langage de l'autre, elle signe son propre amour. Et en lui répond, en répétant, elle lui répond. En répétant, elle lui correspond. Et elle parle en son propre nom, d'où une ruse extraordinaire, c'est de parler en son propre nom tout en répétant. Et toujours, comme toute parole, un aveuglement. Quand on parle, parler, ça n'est pas voir. Hein? Donc toute parole, d'une certaine manière, est aveugle. Et au fond, Écho aveugle, aveuglément, mais très lucidement, correspond à Narcisse, et c'est une histoire d'amour, évidemment, correspond à Narcisse, qui lui-même s'aveugle, parce que quand Narcisse s'aperçoit, d'où la morgue, s'aperçoit qu'il ne peut voir que lui-même, que c'est son image qu'il voit dans l'eau, ne voir que soi-même, c'est une forme d'aveuglement. Ne voir rien d'autre. Hein. Ne voir rien d'autre. Et c'est pourquoi Narcisse pleure. Hein. Il pleure d'une certaine manière et il meurt de ne voir rien d'autre que lui, c'est-à-dire d'être aveugle. Hein. Donc ce sont deux aveuglements. Écho et Narcisse sont deux aveugles qui s'aiment. Alors comment deux aveugles
peuvent-ils s'aimer? Alors, c'est ça la question.
I'll try now to answer your question about the story of Echo and Narcissus. If one focuses on the treatment of the image and not on the love story in the myth of Echo and Narcissus, one sees the myth as about the relationship between specular image and voice, between sight and voice, between light and speech, between the reflection and the mirror. Speech is what's taking place here, right now. There's a mirror, I'm speaking, there's a camera, you pose a question, I repeat it. So I'm acting as both Narcissus and Echo at one and the same time. And that's what's extraordinary in this scene, which I've examined in my seminars. Is the moment when Echo traps Narcissus in a certain way. Echo, cursed by the jealous gods, was never allowed to speak for herself, and was only allowed to repeat the ends of others' phrases. But Echo, in her loving and infinite cleverness, arranges it so that in repeating the last syllables of the words of Narcissus, she speaks in such a way that the words become her own. In a certain way, she appropriates his language. In repeating the language of another, she signs her own love. In repeating, she responds to him. In repeating, she communicates with him. She speaks in her own name by just repeating his words. And as always with speech, one is blind. To speak is to not see. So all speech is to some extent blind, and at base, echo blindly, but quite lucidly, corresponds to Narcissus. It's a love story, after all. She corresponds to Narcissus, who is blind, because Narcissus realizes that he can only see himself, that it's only his own image he is seeing in the water. To see oneself is a form of blindness. One sees nothing else. And it's because of this that Narcissus cries. He cries, and in a way, he dies from not being able to see anyone else. Echo and Narcissus then are two blind people who love each other. Now, how did two blind people love each other? That's the question. With the technology of recording, how does the time it takes us to hear our echo become longer and longer and longer? With the technology of recording, how does the human voice speak across greater and greater expanses of time?
Now we're going to switch from these long exhale sounds that are being used or being formed by the compression of your diaphragm as you are leaning forward, or the compression of your core, to short sounds. These we could call dental sounds. Dental because your tongue is actually being placed towards your teeth, or almost kissing the back of your teeth, the inside of your teeth, in your mouth to form the sounds. So, you can think of t, d, and n, t, d, n. T, D, and N. In English, where if we were to think of maybe the French T, as in toi, toi, that's actually an alveolar sound. So just to distinguish these, actually, before we get into the dental, what we call the dental sounds, T, D, N, let's all say toi, 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 and pay attention to where your tongue is placed in your mouth when you're forming that sound. Where is the tip of your tongue touching when you say toi, you, toi, 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 toi? To form that sound, it's actually on the alveolar ridge, which is behind your teeth on the roof of your mouth. It's sort of kissing there a little bit further back than it would if you're just doing a straight t, t, So let's shift between those two. Think of toi, 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 versus tu, tu, tu. So let's just shift between those two until we find some kind of recognition between the different shape that our tongue is taking, the different shape that our mouth is taking, because of where our tongue is making contact with the different parts of the inside of our mouth. So we'll just shift twice. We'll do two, two, toi, and then two, two, two. starting with toi, we're going to go several times. Toi, toi, tu, tu, toi, toi, tu, tu, toi, toi, tu.
What follows is the first known recording of spoken voice. It's believed to be from the year 1860.
Tu, toi, toi, tu, toi, toi, tu, 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 tu. So that n, n, n is softer, but it's still being formed by that same position of your tongue at the back of your teeth. T, d, n, t, d, n, t, d, n, t, d, n. So let's take a phrase, I don't know. And instead of saying, I don't know, where we have a D, like if we take these dental sounds, D, T, N, or can, I don't know, we first have the D, then the T at the end of don't, and then no. So I, and let's over-accentuate each of these dental sounds. I don't know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Paying attention again to where your tongue is landing behind your teeth. I don't know. I don't know. And let's try to say, I don't know, but instead of having all three of those sounds, let's make it a D for all of them. So instead of I don't know, it's I don't know. I don't.
But what is at stake historically or politically when the thing we rehear is so subject to change? Is it still the speaker? Is it still the person who spoke it, still speaking?
I don't know. If we get the hang of that, I don't know. So if you see what we're doing, we're just actually spelling I don't, D-O-N-D, instead of D-O-N-T. And then instead of K-N-O-W, it's another D-N or a D-O-W.
We're entering an era in which our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time, even if they would never say those things. So, for instance, they could have me say things like, I don't know, Killmonger was right, or Ben Carson is in the sunken place, or how about this, simply, President Trump is a total and complete dipshit.
And you'll see within these, I don't know that when we replace I don't know of the dental with D, sometimes that D might infect that first I, so di do do instead of I don't do. You'll see that happen again. I instead of I tot to, you might get tai tot to. That's okay. Tai tot to. As long as you're just focusing on which dental sound that is. Ta ta. Tai tot to. Or I no no. Instead of I no no. So let's shift now to using the T for all spots. We'll just keep the I there as a sort of register for us. I tut to, I tut to, I tut to, I tut to, I tut to. See the kind of rhythm that you're actually making with the movement of your jaw and also the placement of your tongue in that clicking.
The Nixon Presidential Library and Museum presents a selection from the White House tapes, Conversation 741-2, which took place on June 23rd, 1972.
How does that feel different with your tongue? Nine, no, 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 I don't do, 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 titled do, titled do. It's kind of clicking with the two. Titled to, more saliva, titled to, titled to, forming little bubbles, titled to, to crackle, titled to, titled to, titled to, titled to, nine note, no, 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 nine note, no. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Let's stay with the N. I don't know. And go back into our swing since we hear start to hear that O at the end. So let's do it a little bit slower. Let's start a little slower. Exhaling. Remember, we're rowing with the top of our body. So on an inhale, let's inhale first with our nose, leaning back. And as we come forward, we'll start with the phrase and end with our O forward, right? So let's try one.
Die no, no. Die no, no. Nine no 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 no.
One more.
Nine no do.
And now let's shift to the T with the same. Taito to. Taito to. Taito to. You could see that my T was infecting that first eye. So let's bring it back. Think about the phrase, I don't know. 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 And now to D. I don't know. 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 One more. I don't know. So you can see that's actually much more exhausting in some ways than. And the reason is that with the dentals, we're not actually pushing that much air out. So you only have the short moment of the oh to actually get the rest of the air out before you're intaking a new breath. That's what's exhausting you. I don't know. All those short sounds, D, T, N, are all actually these dental sounds, these sort of compressions, almost these kind of clickings, cracklings at the tip of your mouth. So now let's return to the full phrase as it is, I don't know. And instead of focusing on our tongue, which might have channeled some of our sound actually through our nasal cavity, I don't know, right? Let's focus on the front of our mouth, our muzzle, right? And the shape of it. You should be able to see what's going on to a certain degree, actually, by sort of crossing your eyes and looking at the bottom of your mouth. Or looking down where your mouth might be. Should be. I don't know. I want you to over-articulate each of these D, T, and N. And see what the shape of your mouth wants to do. What you can see, when you can see your lips. At what point can you see a shape sort of protruding below you as you say this phrase? I don't know. 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 So starting I. Your cheeks are sort of being pulled up as if there was a puppeteer above you. I, pulling on your smile to say I. Try scrunching your nose as you do that. I, scrunching up. I. Don't. You see this sort of don't. Don't see your upper lip coming forward. Don't peeking out. Don't below your nose. Don't this hazy form. Don't tunneling from under your nose. I don't. So swinging between them, scrunch nose. I don't. Scrunched to forward. I don't. I don't. How can you make it one movement? I don't. Swinging, rowing as if the rowing that we did with our abdomen in our upper body is now happening just in our face, between our nose, pulling up, and then dropping and pushing this form out from under our nose. I don't, softening it. I don't. So it's really a rowing. I don't. Let's do five in one breath. I don't. How does the T actually pull that upper lip back? I don't. To make that click. I don't.
The facts are there. The conversations are there. The record of actions is there. To anyone who reads his way through this mass of materials I have provided, it will be totally abundantly clear that as far as the president's role with regard to Watergate is concerned,
now it's actually going to happen from your front lip up your cheeks, up the side, up your sides, and then back.
As you will see, now that you also will have this massive evidence I have provided, I have tried to cooperate with the House Judiciary Committee, and I repeat tonight the offer that I have made previously to answer written interrogatories under oath.
Use your hands.
And if there are then issues still unresolved, to meet personally with the chairman of the committee and with Congressman Hutchins to answer their questions under oath. As the committee conducts its inquiry, I also consider it only essential and fair that my counsel, Mr. St. Clair, should be present to cross-examine witnesses and introduce evidence in an effort to establish the truth. I am confident that for the overwhelming majority of those who study the evidence that I shall release tomorrow, those who are willing to look at it fully, fairly, and objectively, the evidence will be persuasive and I hope conclusive.
I don't know.
The materials I make public tomorrow will provide all the additional evidence needed to get Watergate behind us and to get it behind us now.
As we move into an O, I don't know.
Pushing never before in the history of the presidency have records that are so private
becomes a horizon.
Been made so public.
I don't know, like a toad.
In giving you these records,
I don't know. Think of a little bar resting on your bottom lip and pushing it flat.
Blemishes and all.
Horizontal, parallel to the floor.
I am placing my trust
in
the basic fairness of the American people. I know in my own heart that through the long, painful, and difficult process revealed in these transcripts, I was trying in that period to discover what was right and to do what was right. I hope and I trust that when you have seen the evidence in its entirety,
back, as if puppeteers you will suddenly see the behind truth us that's pulling our sides of our lips.
As for myself, I intend to go forward.
I don't know.
To the best of my ability, with the work that you elected me to do.
I don't know.
I shall do so in a spirit.
I don't know.
Perhaps best summed up a century ago by another president.
No.
He was being subjected to unmerciful attack.
I don't know.
Abraham Lincoln said, I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep doing so until the end. If the end brings me out all right, what is said against me won't amount to anything. If the end brings me out wrong, 10 angels swearing I was right would make no difference. Thank you and good evening.
Where I thought I was, dropping all the consonants.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. This was and is tongue-in-cheek.
What about only consonants? Just make the movements. Don't think about what you're saying. Don't think about the sound. Just make the movements of your mouth and movements of air. I, oh, oh, 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 I, oh, oh. We're going to hold the last one. After two more, I, oh, oh, I, oh, and we're gonna hold this one, I, oh, oh. Let's do one more and hold it again, I, oh, oh. Once again. Let's do it in another register. I don't know. 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 Back down. I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Keeping those three forms. I don't know. And up. I don't know. 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 No, I don't know. Back down. I don't know. 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 I don't know.